This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehiz Wuhib. Coming up on Africa News Tonight,
we have to really make sure that all efforts are being made so we stop further transmission in the early stages.
That's James Ponpon, the Deputy Intervention Commander and former Chief Training Officer for the Bureau of Correction in Liberia, speaking on the mental health training for some correction officers. We'll have more on the story as we continue our series on Liberia's mental health programs.
Also, efforts to contain an outbreak of Ebola in the DRC has become more difficult, and health officials in Nigeria say 12 people have died from cholera in the northeast of the country.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Our top story, when Ebola broke out in West Africa in 2014, no one was prepared. A potential vaccine had been in limbo since a previous outbreak a decade earlier. Governments dragged their feet while failing to recognize the risk that the outbreak carried. Local health workers were quickly overwhelmed and aid agencies were left scrambling to catch up. By the time the epidemic was brought under control, more than 11,000 people were dead in three countries and the cost had risen to several billion dollars. Flash forward to May 8th, when first word emerged about a possible outbreak of Ebola in a remote village in the DRC. Within 2 days, the DRC had dispatched experts to the scene. International agencies shipped in personnel, mobile medical labs, and a batch of the vaccine, which was tested at the end of the last outbreak. So far, there have been 21 deaths, and concerns remain that the virus could surpass the containment efforts. But there are also hopes that the scope of the outbreak may be limited thanks to the painful lessons from the last outbreak. World Health Organization spokesman Tarek Jaserevich, a spokesman for the World Health Organization, talks about what the world has learned last time and what it's learning from this outbreak.
So I think the coordinated action is essential. We know how damaging Ebola can be to the communities, and we have to mount a quick and robust response, not to get to the point where a transmission chain would get out of control.
Every epidemic has its unique challenges. In this case, the villages that were first hit were up to a 19-hour trip by motorcycle. Land had to be cleared, first for helicopters, then planes. With quick action came the need for funds. The WHO asked for $26 million last Friday, and more than half of that had been pledged as of Tuesday. Jaserevich says that's a small amount given the cost of the last outbreak.
This outbreak has to be tackled very fast, and it's better to spend more today than to be forced to spend much, much more afterwards, because we know what damage, economic damage, was done to the countries in West Africa in 2014.
The repeated outbreaks also have the positive side effect of developing a core of health workers whose experience is proving priceless, including those in the DRC, which is now dealing with its ninth Ebola outbreak. The result has been the deployment of 100 anthropologists to educate the community.
As you can imagine, having Ebola virus circulating in a community is a cause of a concern for the local population. And that's why it was important, really, to have teams of social mobilizers, to have anthropologists that are being deployed to make sure that everything is explained to the community.
The bottom line for now is keeping the outbreak from spreading. The vaccine is being used first on health workers and the friends and relatives of those who already have been infected. If it all works, the aid agencies and national governments will soon be looking for new lessons.
Efforts to contain an outbreak of Ebola in the Democratic Republic of Congo has become more difficult. This after three patients quarantined in Mbandaka fled into the city of more than a million people. One of the escapees was brought back the same day that he escaped on Saturday, while the bodies of the other two were found Tuesday, the day after they fled. The escapees raised concerns that the patients may have passed on the highly contagious disease to other people. It also underscores the challenges of keeping the outbreak under control in a large urban area. Vaccination efforts have focused on so-called ring strategy of inoculating health workers and friends and family of those who already have contracted Ebola. The outbreak began in two remote villages before spreading into Mbandaka, the provisional capital.
This week marks exactly 6 months since President Emmerson Mnangagwa took office after Robert Mugabe gave in to military pressure and resigned. Sebastian Mofu reports from Harare on what Mnangagwa has done since November on his promises of jobs and improving the economy.
I appeal to all genuine patriotic Zimbabweans.
That was President Emmerson Mnangagwa last November, promising to revamp Zimbabwe's economy. During the weekend, the 75-year-old politician told his supporters that since he took over, a lot had improved in Zimbabwe.
Kubva patakatanga kufamba rwendo iroro,
he says in the past, Zimbabwe's annual foreign direct investment was around $400 or $500 million, but for the past 5 months, it has gone to more than $15 billion committed into investment in this country with international companies and countries like Canada, South Africa, China, Britain, and the United States coming to invest in power generation and water. Last Tuesday, he says, the British gave $100 million to aid in trying to eliminate Zimbabwe's cash crisis. Then he goes into English discussing the country's methane gas reserves.
After 3.5 years, we should be able to produce 8 million liters of fuel per day. The country only consumes 5 million a day. 3 million liters plus year per day. Zimbabwe will prosper. Zimbabwe will shine, not only in SADC, but will shine in Africa, because Zimbabwe is in good hands. Our political partisan PF is a revolutionary party. It caters for the interests of the people.
Chidoma Saisai, an unemployed former media student, says Zimbabwe's people have yet to see the money the president is talking about. She says there is still a shortage of cash and the black market continue to operate. What she does see is greater expression of political views, a significant change from the Mugabe era when authorities regularly harassed the president's critics and opponents.
But in terms of maybe freedom of expression, you find that a lot more people are liberal with their views and their opinions, and you find that there are a lot of political parties that have come into the fore.
Harare-based economist John Robertson says it is too early for Zimbabwe's economy to fully recover from Mugabe's populist policies, which drove away most foreign investment.
The economy is still in great difficulty, but you have to remember that the difficulties we face were built slowly into the system here by 38 years of very badly chosen economic policies. And I think that the media is largely responsible for increasing the expectations of the population beyond what was reasonably possible within a short period.
Robertson says Mnangagwa might make major policy changes, such as compensating white farmers for land that was confiscated during the Mugabe years and ensuring that black farmers can get bank loans instead of depending on government handouts.
I think this is why the president is waiting for the elections, so that with the elections behind him, he will have increased amounts of courage to make changes that will prove unpopular to the people who felt that they had not yet received what they were expecting.
The president is expected soon to announce a date for Zimbabwe's elections, which could take place in July or August. Sebastian Mofu for VOA News, Harare.
A collective of Zimbabwe civic organizations has released a report that details gross human rights violations last year and tags police as among the top abusers. Reporter Kuzai Zanawash has more details.
Zimbabwe Human Rights Non-Governmental Forum is made up of 22 civic organizations who were actively involved in compiling the 63-page report. Dzikamai Bere is with the forum. He says things may be worse than the report details.
This report is very conservative because we only work with verified information. There could be more than that.
Bere provides a breakdown of the types of human rights violations that took place around Zimbabwe.
48,200 violations against school children. 5,707 violations related to voter registration. 9,309 violations against women. 7 cases of abduction. 184 cases of torture. That's unbelievable. 1,873 households were evicted in 2017, affecting 6,644 people, most of them being children.
Many call the events leading to the dramatic resignation of Zimbabwe's longtime president, Robert Mugabe, in November, a military intervention that was within the law, as the legislature ruled. The report does not see it that way.
The report talks about the 15 November military coup, a total overthrow of the constitution, about the torture with some of the journalists from the state media endured during the takeover of the information machinery.
In the list of perpetrators, the ruling ZANU-PF is implicated. In the list of perpetrators, the ruling ZANU-PF is implicated in intimidation and other violations. Because police topped the list, the forum has launched an anti-impunity campaign that is meant to make police accountable and follow up on police violation cases that often go unreported. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zinawashe reporting from the Zimbabwe capital, Harare.
This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America. Health officials in Nigeria say 12 people have died from cholera in recent days in the northeast of the country, an area already dealing with the Boko Haram insurgency. Another 134 people are ill with suspected cholera in the town of Mubi in Adamawa State. The situation is complicated by a nurses' strike in the area, further stretching an already overburdened system. Cholera is a bacterial disease spread by contaminated food or drinking water. It causes severe diarrhea and subsequent dehydration and can kill within hours if not treated. The psychological impact of more than a decade of civil conflict exacerbated by the Ebola crisis in West Africa have contributed to a mental health crisis in Liberia that has been intensified by misconceptions, stigma, and the resulting discrimination surrounding mental illnesses. However, the Atlanta, Georgia-based nonprofit organization Carter Center has sought to educate many facets of Liberia's society about mental illnesses. I found out how the program is improving the way Liberia's police force handles mental health cases. Through the Carter Center Mental Health Program, which was implemented in the country in 2010, Liberia's police force and prison system have been enhanced, with police officers and corrections officers receiving training by mental health professionals and other trained police officers to help them identify a potentially mentally ill person and treat the person with compassion rather than disdain. Frida Stewart is a police officer who has received the training. She said by partnering with mental health clinicians means she is able to better identify a person who may need mental health care and get them off of the street and into a safer environment.
We call them from the situation, whether we can transfer from that standpoint in time, because from some questions, ask people who are in the surrounding, whether they have drank something and whether they have knives to harm somebody.
Stewart said the training has helped to de-escalate police encounters and the risk of harm to the person who is experiencing a mental condition, as well as the police officer.
With the training acquired, it really helped us in dealing with people because we've learned how to treat people with compassion that are suffering with mental illness. They are one of us. They are human. They have rights like any normal citizen.
Liberia's prisons have also benefited from mental health care training. James Ponpon is the Deputy Intervention Commander and former Chief Training Officer for the Bureau of Corrections in Liberia. He said the training has helped corrections officers to better handle prisoners with mental health problems.
So when they see a person behaving a certain way, they call him out and then try to talk to him, interview him. For example, you see an inmate, you say good morning, and he's just looking at you. It's time to eat, and you gave him his food, he's not eating. Sometimes some of them want to commit suicide, some of them kind of frustrated for the long term, but on the other hand, too, we also must be keen that people have mental health issues as well.
Ponpon said most of the corrections officers have been trained to identify abnormal behavior either from a mental disorder or substance abuse.
For us to be able to identify what is causing that, this training was actually important because Carter Center makes us to know that people behave a certain way because the mind is not functioning well. So when you see them behaving this way, there is a certain way you approach them. Because in a prison, we might think that they are behaving aggressive and you have to restrain them, but actually the mind is not coordinating well.
Once the corrections officer identifies a mental health issue, the officer contacts a mental health clinician. The mental health clinician then evaluates the prisoner and determines what type of treatment is needed.
Once this case is identified, they have a mental health referral hospital. That referral area is contacted, and the doctor responsible to provide the treatment comes to the prison, or we transfer the inmates to the mental health hospital.
Ponpon adds that corrections officers have also been trained to use the telephone if they suspect a prisoner is suffering from a mental illness. The officer would simply call a mental health clinician, and based on information the officer provides, an initial assessment can be made over the phone. The Monrovia Central Prison houses a main clinic where mental health treatment is now offered at the clinic, thanks to the passage of Liberia's mental health law, which states that everyone has the right to mental health care. Kim Lewis, VOA News, Monrovia, Liberia.
An international donors roundtable for the Gambia has kicked off in Brussels, Belgium. President Adama Barrow has praised the European Union and other development partners for standing by the country at a time, he says, it needs funds to rebuild its economy. VOA's Pandera Mbai reports.
The conference is the first of its kind since President Adama Barrow came to power in December of 2016. It is part of his administration's efforts to fulfill its National Development Plan, NDP, for the fiscal year 2018 to 2021. The NDP aims to improve the country's key developmental components, including the economy, healthcare, education, and agriculture. In his speech, President Adama Barrow outlined the NDP's plan of action.
My government is unconditionally committed to investing in our human capital, development through education, preventive health and social protection guarantees, as well as sustainable development for our youthful population. Other areas of much concern and commitment hinge on improving and promoting clean energy while ensuring efficient communication and telecommunication infrastructure. This will enhance connectivity to broaden trade and investment opportunities.
Those efforts have received a large boost with support from the European Union, which so far has provided the euro equivalent of over $264 million to the country. Nivin Mimike is a commissioner in charge of international cooperation and development at the EU.
Last year, we witnessed the first democratic and peaceful change of leadership in the Gambia since its independence, thanks to the resolve of the Gambian people and the new government, together with the support of the international community. The European Union did not waste time and acted quickly to help our Gambian friends with development support of €225 million to date.
Niven notes that the Barrow government has inherited a virtually collapsed economy and years of misrule from the former Jammeh dictatorship. This, he says, has made Gambia's case urgent for an international economic intervention to help bail out the new administration with the equivalent of $164 million.
And today, I'm delighted to say that the European Union has pledged additional €140 million to its existing support. Together with the contributions pledged by other participants in today's conference, we have reached the total amount of €1.45 billion of support to the National Development Plan of the Gambia, almost €1.5 billion.
The EU had frozen economic support for the country under the former Jammeh administration, likely in protest against his administration's poor human rights record. With the advent of Barrow's government, Niven says he's now convinced that the Gambia is a democracy.
Your government, President Barrow, have demonstrated your commitment to transform your country. Your government has responded to the call of your people. You have fully embraced this historical opportunity to open a new chapter, built on strong democratic institutions, the respect of human rights and the rule of law, and sustainable and shared economic growth.
European Union officials say their efforts will support several initiatives, including those for caution on security, sustainable growth and development, transitional justice, economic partnership, trade, fisheries and migration. For example, the EU is already sponsoring efforts to discourage illegal migration from the Gambia to Europe. Thousands of Gambian youths have died over the years due to their risky and unsuccessful backway journey to Europe. President Barrow told donors that his government has put in place proper monitoring mechanisms to help ensure accountability of public funds, a free press, and a more democratic Gambia. Barrow promises that his government will not disappoint the European Union. Barrow is also working with the International Monetary Fund and the World Bank to encourage greater budgetary transparency and responsibility. The country's debt is about 130% of its gross domestic product. Banjul has promised to cut down on unnecessary spending and to work to reduce its debt. For VOA Africa, this is Pandirimbay reporting.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
For listeners on VOA's Nairobi FM station, please stay tuned for the Swahili Evening News coming up at 16:30 UTC.
For all other listeners, please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports. Tune in again at 1800 UTC for another edition of African News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Suleiman Terawali, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, warring factions in South Sudan's civil war are scheduled to begin meeting in Ethiopia on Thursday, May 17th, in an effort to end the brutal conflict. Despite several agreements and ceasefires, the fighting continues. South Sudan in crisis. On the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning into the sunny side of sports Monday through Friday at 1630 and 1830 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/sunny. It's the sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America.
VOAAfrica.com.
On VOAAfrica.com, the news updates never stop. Our primary goal is to keep you informed.
VOAAfrica.com, your trusted source for news and information.